Greetings, loved ones. Let's take a journey.
I know a place where the grass is really greener. Warm, wet and wild. There must be something in the water. Sipping gin and juice. Laying underneath the palm trees.
Okay.
And
listening to Flame On. I am Brian the Bear. I am here to introduce probably one of the coolest things we've ever gotten to do. I certainly have ever gotten to do in comics. A couple weeks ago, Cap and Tony from Nerdy Show and The Question and I drove all the way up to Charlotte, North Carolina, where we attended Heroes Con, which if you've never heard of it, it's probably one of the coolest comic conventions I've ever heard of or been to. It was cool because it was a lot of comics creators in a not very small but not very large space. And the attendance was, on the first day, not too shabby, but there are lots of down moments to kind of visit with creators. And one of the things that I got to do, was actually moderate a panel with Jonathan Hickman of Fantastic Four, Nightly News, Red Mask from Mars, Manhattan Project, Secret. I got to interview him, his two artists for Manhattan Projects and Secret, Nick Patara and Ryan Bodenheim, and their colorist, or rather Secret's colorist, Mike Garland. We did about a 45-minute panel, and I got to moderate it, and it was fantastic. The question was there on the floor, helping get questions from the audience. Cap recorded this, and so without too much further ado, we'll talk more about our con experience in an upcoming episode, but here is the Jonathan Hickman image panel all about the Manhattan Projects and Secret with a little bit of mention of Marvel stuff in there for good measure. So I hope you enjoy, and we will see you back very soon with a whole new Flame On. Nightly News, everybody? Anybody? Yeah? Friggin' changed my perspective on certain things, and hopefully gave you guys some food for thought. Red Mask from Mars, for which we have the illustrator here, Mr. Ryan Bodenheim. Let's see, what else we got? Of course, Red Wing, which, you know, being a fan of Doctor Who and time travel in general, blew my mind and was awesome. We have Mr. Nicholas Patara here.
Yeah, Patara.
Patara, yeah. Sorry.
Wait, it's Patara?
Yeah, I screwed my name up.
John doesn't know why it's pronounced Patara.
That is bull.
He's called me Patara forever, never corrected him.
That's what it is now.
And how many of you guys are reading Secret? Yeah? Right? Some of the coolest use of color I've seen in a while, and we have Mike Garland down here on the far left. He is the colorist. So, this is the awesome panel. I am Brian, just real quick, from Flame On Show and Nerdy Show. We are at the booth 441 or so. Feel free to come by and say hi. Real quick, just so we can talk, we're going to have everybody silence their cell phones, of course. This is the obligatory, you know, don't be that guy or that lady. We like our phones. They're amazing tools, but we don't want them distracting.
I'm not turning my cell phone off.
These guys get the exception to that. And then it's funny.
You don't have to turn off your cell phone if you don't want to. I kind of dig it.
Really?
It breaks the ice. Especially if somebody has like a great ringer.
Nice.
Who's got Van Halen? Me.
Nice. Well, there you go. And this is also predominantly an image panel. So we know, of course, Mr. Hickman is doing some amazing stuff over at Marvel. That is cool, and you can ask questions about it. But we are here really to talk about the exciting creator-owned books they're doing. So, you know, feel free to ask questions, but if it gets crazy, we might rein it in. I don't know. So on that note, I'd like to ask first right off the colorist about the use of color in Secret, because it is one of the coolest things. Now, I've talked to them ahead of time. I'll let them tell you about it, but if you haven't checked it out, actually, I don't know. Mike, do you want to talk about it first and then pass it off to Mr. John?
I don't know if I should start.
Why not?
Well... We use a monochromatic color style with it. Well, one to two colors per page, but the actual color sets were provided to me by John. I don't know if I'm spoiling the secret. That shouldn't be spoiled. Get it.
I think you should take the credit and get some more jobs. That's
true. Matt Fraction did tell me my world was beautiful today. So
there you go.
That's pretty awesome. But yeah, I don't know.
The idea was for it to be like really super moody, and I think Michael's done a phenomenal job of making it feel that way. I think it's a really unique, and I think it's looks a lot different than a lot of books out there. And I think it's a neat little book all the way around.
What was your so you wanted to make it very atmospheric and sort of set a mood with it? Is that what kind of gave you the idea to do that various kind of, you know, the colors for different things?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked about it a bit. I mean, I would say that of all the goals that we talked a lot about wanting it to be really moody. And a lot of people associate that with being very black, very noir, very heavily shadowed, that kind of stuff. And Ryan, is it fair to say that's just not in, that's not...
I was pretty insistent to not do blacks on that book.
Right.
Because I didn't want it to have the noir look.
Yeah, you didn't want it to look like... You didn't want people to look at it and immediately kind of snap to that, oh, this is one of those kind of books.
Right.
Right, yeah. And so we had...
it's not necessarily...
Right, because it's not. No, absolutely not. And so the idea was that we accomplish it in a different way, and so we did it with a really neat color set, and Michael's executing it beautifully, and we're really happy with it.
Yeah, it stands out to me off the shelf, just one of the coolest books that's using color in ways that a lot of books aren't. So if you're not reading, you should. The other, of course, cool image book they got going on now is Manhattan Projects, plural. When you were thinking about, the story and, how much you wanted to do that was fictional and nonfictional and all that, the story is like driving that. Are you trying to reel in certain historical events to kind of anchor it? Or, what's your process with telling this interesting take on history?
Okay, so Manhattan Projects is a story about what if the secret project to build an atomic bomb was a cover for more other stranger, cooler secrets. And what the book is it is not a alt history telling of what would happen to these guys if events were different. It's not what would Einstein do if he was in this scenario? It's a book about what if these guys that were these super intellects and these amazing men who changed the world, what if they weren't? What if they weren't good people generally, but very, very bad people? And that's the story of the Manhattan Projects. It's not an alt history book. It's an alt dude book, sort of. So. And shenanigans ensue, right?
So when you were developing this, Nicholas, you were drawing this, I heard you talking earlier about some of the things you would like root the characters when you would see what they actually looked like and then go from there as a departure. I think, talk a little bit, was it Von Braun that had the robot arm? Is that?
Yeah, that was Jonathan's idea. So Wernher von Braun, he was from Operation Paperclip. He was originally a Nazi, and I guess one of the first pictures of him whenever we got him, he had a big cast on his arm. So Jonathan said, we'll give him a big robot arm. And everything kind of spins off of like really silly, fun stuff like that. It's all grounded and all heady and cool because it's Jonathan. And then my art's kind of quirky and weird and just kind of pulls it together. So, yeah, there's a little bit of truth behind everything. I actually watched a documentary on Oppenheimer, and it said he used to go trips on the desert. In issue one, he made me draw a panel of him on the desert on the horseback, and then I was like, oh, man, that's why he made me do that. Just thought he wanted me to draw something really boring.
He wanted a horse.
Yeah, he just really likes horses. So. But, yeah, everything's kind of grounded and then just kind of an insane take on little things like that. So it's really fun.
And they're both ongoing titles, correct?
Yeah, ours is ongoing. As long as it keeps gaining readership, I'm going to keep drawing it.
So. Sweet.
Well, there's a big difference between the two. Manhattan Projects is ongoing in the sense that there is no end, right? Secret is a story that's a spy, espionage kind of thriller. And stories like that at some point kind of demand an ending or else readers just get really irritated. You guys get pissed, let's be honest. And so at some point, Secret will want an ending, and we'll deliver that. But right now, the books are just chugging along fine.
Fantastic. I this is one of these questions I know everybody always asks, but it's really fascinating to me. I'd like to know a little bit about your influences, both visually, particularly, actually all of you visually, because I know, John, you're a former, was it visual designer? Is that what the industry called? I don't know what your exact title was, but...
Corporate
illustrator monkey. Talk about some of the design influences you have, maybe, you know, other artists or architecture, whatever your influences are. I'm just fascinated to know, and I think a lot of people are kind of interested. And let's start with Nick here.
For me, I got into comics. Should I be talking into this like that?
Yeah. All
right. For me, I got into comics because Frank Quitely's artwork. I checked out The Authority. My stuff's very Frank Quitely, like Mobius-driven. And so from there, I just loved how gestural and organic it was. And from there, I just fell in love with all the Mobius guys, Seth Fisher and Jeff Darrow and all those artists. And I don't know, there's like an honesty to it and the lack of blacks and stuff. It's all kind of form-driven. And I think when you work in that kind of detail and you're that gestural, you can just pick on like nuances of character, whether they're slumped over or like Frank Quitely draws that big fat Superman. And when you work out, the strongest guys are these big fat looking dudes. And it's really cool to me how honest his work read. And so my art is like a mix of those guys with my own shortcomings and kind of mixed in. And it's kind of quirky and it works for the book, I think. So that's my background as far as influences go.
John?
What are yours?
I don't know if I have any anymore.
Who did you like?
Originally, Jim Lee, like a lot of guys.
You're goddamn right.
And I don't think there's any trace of that left in there. I don't know. I think from there I went to like Michael Turner, and then a lot like Nick's list. I think we all kind of have the same taste when it comes to that.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Just a lot of open line work like Frank Quitely and Jeff Darrow. And I never actually saw Mobius until lately.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say.
Either. I mean, I've seen his stuff, but I only really got into his stuff relatively recently.
What do you like coloring-wise?
Coloring-wise, well, for this book, I think the biggest influence for me is just all the film noir movies I watch, which is funny because you mentioned that you didn't want to give it a noir look, but like I try to give it those really heavy-handed shadows that noir has.
No, all that works, absolutely. Yeah.
But as far as comics go, I mean, it's anyone who's really good. Like Val Staples' stuff on Criminal, I love. Laura Martin is just the best at what she does. Dean White is probably my biggest coloring influence, even though I color nothing like him.
No, Dean's got some game, no doubt.
Yeah. It's intimidating.
Yeah. I don't know. I like whatever's trendy at the moment, graphic design-wise. I like really clean stuff as far as that. Art-wise, I like, you know, Sergio Toby and, like, European guys and stuff like that. So, but, you know, I draw very little now. So.
Yeah, but you can definitely tell your early stuff that you drew. I mean, it had a real distinct feel. And I mean, again, it's like nothing else on the shelf. And that always what stood out to me, certainly, about your work. So, what about writing influences? I think one time I actually met you at MegaCon. I said you remind me of Gene Wolfe, but who are your writers that you really like that you don't draw inspiration from, but you may have found formative?
Oh, well, I mean, in comics, it's the obvious guys, right? It's the three best guys, probably Alan and Grant, obviously, and then some of the poetic stuff that Neil did whenever he was doing that. But I like a lot of the self-referential, you know, really, really clever stuff that, like, Matt does, Fraction does, whenever he's doing, like, Casanova. And, you know, traditionally, though, books, you know, science fiction and stuff like that, I'm a big Frank Herbert guy, right? I mean, that's pretty much, I don't know, I think he's the best science fiction writer ever, but, you know. All the great ones are dead now, so
yeah, right.
It's kind of like everybody's relatively good. They're not going to fight anytime soon.
That might make a good comic, though.
You say that, and I'm already there.
So what's the best Dune book, in your opinion, then?
God Emperor of Dune.
Yes. All right, good. That's awesome.
So, obviously, this isn't my show. I want you guys to have some questions. Does anyone have any? Feel free to raise your hand. We have a guy now. Actually, we have the question from our Flame On show down here, and he is going to come to you if he can.
You can come up here because this isn't stretched that
short.
Far.
His leash is short today.
So. I have a question.
Yeah.
For John. You already have like some notable historical figures like Einstein and Oppenheimer in your books. Are there any others that are going to make an appearance that anytime soon?
Issue four is out next week. Five is already pretty much done. I think issue six, you'll see Yuri Gagarin. And some other Russian guys. But yeah, obviously. I thought really seriously about putting the Bilderberg people in there, but I thought for sure we would get sued for that. You know?
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think those guys would sue us. I mean, Einstein's cool because he's dead. He can't sue you, right? Because it's all satire. But putting live dudes in there, I don't know, man. Yeah, that seems to be a little beyond our normal bad taste. So.
Well, you got the Masons in there, and they haven't come after you yet, so that's good.
Yeah, but everybody makes a Masons joke. That's kind of part of the mystique. They're okay with that. But
who else has got a question?
And you don't have to come up to the mic. You can just yell shit out.
Yeah, it's a pretty small room.
Then I have no purpose. I would prefer.
Well, you look really cool with that mic. You look really cool with that mic, though.
I don't know if you can answer this too honestly, but I'll ask it anyway. John, the publishers that you work for are very different. And they're, I'm sure both have their strengths and their weaknesses, but at the end of the day, do you find the, you know, image path that you're on very more rewarding, or do you find it to be pretty much the same amount of reward in terms of your creative obligations? I mean, do you like working for both pretty equally, or?
Well, you're asking do I like Marvel better than Image, or Image
yeah,
better than Marvel?
Which is more rewarding?
It's really two completely different things. And there's a certain amount of gratitude. I mean, I would not have a job if Image had not published my first book, Nightly News. I mean, I just wouldn't have got any of the Marvel work. But certainly, Marvel has gone out of their way to promote me and push my books. And that's one of the reasons why when we launch an Image book now, like Manhattan Projects with Nick or Secret with Ryan, that they do very well. It's because people know that I'm going to put in a good effort, and they know that I'm going to work with talented people, and there's a certain amount of quality there. So it's, I think they you know, certainly help each other. As far as though which one is more rewarding, I mean, one, I own what I do. So, of course, that's infinitely more gratifying. But Marvel's a fantastic place to work. I mean, it really is. I mean, there's a lot of really smart people that work there. So, I don't know. How many of you guys are trying to get into the business, want to get published, all that jazz? Anybody? Yeah. It's a tricky time because of kind of how market's contracting a little bit. And, I mean, the economy is obviously what it is. And so, that is the beautiful thing about doing Image books, is that they'll publish your stuff, and you know, it may not do gangbusters out of the gate, but people will pick up those books and people will talk about them. Nightly News, my first book, which I got all of my work off of, only sold like 5,000, 6,000 copies of the first issue, and then after that, it went down to 3,000 or 4,000 copies for the remaining five issues. And that is not, when you add in your printing costs and all that kind of stuff, you know, that's not great money. But everything I got after that was off of those books. So it's definitely it remains the best avenue in.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
How do you like your stuff?
I love it. I've always been pretty much behind digital, but that's what I read. I just think it's something that there's a lot of fighting, it seems like, with people who can't imagine anything other than print. but I think they can both coexist. I love digital because it all looks the way it was supposed to look.
Yeah, I was kind of blown away. Ryan showed me, he's got a new iPad. Are they calling it iPad 3 or are they just calling it iPad with Retina display? Whatever. It looks amazing. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen like comics on the new one, but the resolution is incredible, and I mean, it's definitely a phenomenal experience. Much better than the first couple versions, and I thought those were very usable. Were you really asking what about like breaking in by doing like a web comic? Is that kind of what you were saying?
No, we're just more creative.
Well. You know, in terms of how the market is shifting, I mean, we're seeing more and more and more people, our digital numbers continue to creep up to the point where they're now significant. I mean, it's not the 3% that they were the first year. You know, it's much higher than that, more significant with the image books so far, because a lot of stores don't order heavy on those and they sell out very quickly, but they have phenomenal word of mouth, and so people go and grab them online through the store. But I know that if it would have been around during nightly news, like for example, our print runs were set for the first couple of issues, and if we'd had digital around then, I know that we would have been over 10, 12,000 copies because, I mean, everybody was talking about that book when it first came out. So, which was great. Have you looked at your stuff on there yet?
Yeah. I downloaded it on the phone and I thought it sucked. But then on the iPad, Ryan showed me last night. It looked really good. It looked better than in print. It looked incredible. And so I like that. And I think digital is necessary just because people growing up now, 5, 6, 7 year olds, they have leapfrogs, these children's e-readers, and if you're consuming media on that growing up, it's going to be as awkward as reading an iPad to someone who's read books their whole life, handing them a book. So you're going to have to make that jump. I think it's completely necessary. And like John said, the numbers are significant. A lot of my friends that work in Image, they get really good royalty checks off their thing. So if it's another avenue, especially to reach readers that there's not a comic shop in every city, you know. So I think it's important. I think it's necessary. I don't know if I enjoy it as much as the paper. I think I still like the paper more, but I think it's pretty neat. I think the colors look better on it too, so it's pretty cool.
Only if the market determined that that was now the revenue stream, the primary revenue stream. I mean, it would be foolish for any of us up here to do that because, I mean, we're selling anywhere from, you know, 17 to 20 something thousand copies of a book a month. I mean, we're breaking the top 100 on both these books. I mean, so it's not, we're doing fine, you know? So the system as it is right now is working for us perfectly fine. But, you know, if we wake up a year from now or 2 years from now and the entire, you know, and everything has gone iTunes, all the books are 99 cents and our marketplace is now 5 million customers as opposed to 500,000, then yeah, I mean, I don't care. I mean, I tell stories. I'm not in it for the paper, right?
Although we did get new matte paper
it
on our
books.
Nice.
It's
really nice.
Nice.
Well, the other thing is, like, I don't necessarily see print ever going away because iTunes is the most popular way to get music now, but they still sell CDs. Every kind of format that's been digitized, the analog version of it is still around. It's not gone. It's just they sell less of them.
Yeah, but that's neat. That's us becoming a niche of a niche market.
Well, yeah.
You know, so it's like we'd be vinyl stores,
which is really
cool. But you know, not a way to survive. What would you have? I didn't follow that.
Said Mark Wade wrote a column about a month ago where he said that as an independent publisher now, his relationship with piracy is free marketing. He gets people talking about the book and reading the book in the hope that it transfers over to people
Sure.
As other people that publish their own comics, your thoughts on that?
I think Mark is probably right. I think there's no getting away from it. I am a little bit opposed to sanctioning it as good in the good versus evil scale of things, because it's not. But, you know, I don't swim against the current either. So my stuff is downloaded and at phenomenal rates. I mean, our you know, I Twittered the other day that such an asshole phrase that somebody like posted you know you do the follows thing and it tells you whenever somebody uses your @, you know, asshole, right? You know, but somebody included my handle in the torrent link to our indie books, and I was like, yeah, that's just bad karma for that person. They're gonna die in like a car wreck. But you know, beyond being mildly irritating, it doesn't bother me. I don't think about it because we're doing within the system we're doing about as well as we can do, I think. Marvel's got a lot more really elaborate kind of shenanigans they pull with the torrent people that's really fascinating that, you know, I can't talk about, but you know, it is what it is, right? It's like world hunger. It sucks. What are you going to do? You're still going to eat your dinner, you know?
Well, I will admit
to not eating my dinner.
I mean, I'm 24 and I really got into comics in college. I mean, I was a comic book fan when I was a kid, but not like a hardcore collector. And I don't pirate anymore, but when I was in college, like, I wouldn't be A, doing this right now if it wasn't for pirating comics or buying the 10 to 20 comics a month that I do buy, because a friend of mine just handed me the entire Ultimate Marvel Universe on a DVD and was like, here, read this, and I skipped classes for a week and I caught up on like 100 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man.
That just means you read slow, guys.
Well, that was and every other series in the Ultimate.
Exactly. So there you go. There's the plus. We got Michael.
Speaking of Mark Waid, he has that Luther comic and Marvel Infinite where it's a digital-only format that wouldn't even work on print. Have any of you looked into that or thought of pursuing that as a way to get your stories out there?
It doesn't make sense for us to do digital-only stuff right now. I mean, beyond the fascination with just fucking around with it. And we'll do that. I mean, we experiment with stuff all the time, and I'm not saying that we won't, but as a model, you know, I'm busy, and I don't have a lot of free time, and right now I have responsibilities to these guys and to Marvel, and I still owe a Feel Better Now trade to everybody. Exactly. So,
oh yeah,
as the one pre-order we had. Oh. I'm just kidding. It was more than that.
No, I pre-ordered.
Oh. Nice.
I do really like what Mark Waid is doing just in terms of format. I remember the thing he's linked to a bunch of times is like this random Flash EVNR page with a guy named Balak. I remember randomly stumbling across that in college and just being like, this is an incredible experience. There's something about, I mean, I've had arguments where it's not comics with friends of mine, and maybe they're right, but there's something about that cutting from one panel to the next that creates this momentum that reading a comic doesn't have for me. And it's definitely a different experience, and I love comics traditionally, but I am very attracted to that cutting panels format for some reason.
I like the word balloons not covering the art.
Yeah.
That was groundbreaking.
Did you guys see that Nova story, the AVX thing?
Yeah.
The transitions and the use of the different backgrounds, I mean, that seems to open up storytelling possibilities that are...
My one problem with that, and Mark Waid, I think, mentioned it in a blog post, though, is that, I mean, I read it on Comixology. I don't know if it's different on the Marvel app, but it fades between panels. It doesn't cut, which doesn't create that same momentum that I was talking about. And I think it's a little weaker for that. But I loved it. I mean, it was interesting.
Anybody else have any questions? Yes.
I know you can come right out and answer it, but is there any chance that some of these series might be a little more interconnected than they appear on the surface?
You talking about is secret, secretly?
Secret has its origins in Manhattan Project or Redlands.
No. I'm not doing that in this. I'm not doing that in this. I know you're asking that because everything that I do at Marvel has got these little tangential relationships. But
the real answer lies in picking up copies to Red Mask from Mars.
Right. All the covers make a big dollar sign, right? I do a lot of that stuff at Marvel, just kind of like to entertain myself. Yeah there's some of that in there. But I also do a lot of it because it makes it all feel like it's kind of part of my little universe inside of that big universe. Mm. And I think people kind of dig that. Yeah. I could be wrong. It's just one of those things that you just try and do to make it a little bit more yours when you're working on things that aren't yours, right?
So I got a question. Are there any future plans for Pax Romana or Red Wing?
I think we're done with Red Wing, aren't we?
Yeah, I just want to work on Manhattan Projects.
Tell them how long you want to work on Manhattan Projects.
I don't know. What was it, 8 years? 20 years? I don't know, a long time.
But he's got like 240 issues left.
Yeah, it's good.
Nice.
We got a lot of cool stuff coming.
That was the 10-year plan, 25 trades?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, eventually those living people won't be living anymore, so you can start using them.
This is true.
I did put the Red Wing helmet in Grove's office, and Hickman deleted it, so... Yeah, it's definitely not interconnected.
This is true. Every year when people die, we look through the list to see who's interesting, so we can stick in the book. So I don't know. PAX one day maybe, but I think we're done with Red Wing. I think we're happy with what we did there, and you know, we're just going to do Manhattan Projects for a while now.
Awesome. Anybody else? Who else got a question? Yeah, right here. I've heard you have notebooks, John, like just labyrinthine drawings and.
Yeah, I'm a little dysfunctional in the way that I can kind of keep all that stuff straight in my head, but you know, like. With Marvel, all the Fantastic Four stuff, like I knew that whole story, like from day one. I mean, very little of that was ad-libbed, right? So it's a 3-year run, and I just knew it, right? Secret is more like that than Manhattan Projects. Like Secret, I know where we're ending up. Manhattan Projects, I'm intentionally, for the first time ever, not doing that. Like I'm trying to intentionally not work ahead. Like I'm conscious. Like I know when I do something with a certain character that I'm going to come back to it at some point. That's just craft stuff. But for the first time ever, I'm not knowing. I'm intentionally not already working towards a predetermined conclusion. Does that make sense? So yeah, I'm not keeping it straight in my head on this one. Who knows what's going to happen?
Plus, you couldn't because I would derail it because I draw like really quirky stuff and write him. I draw him into corners with his writing. So
nice.
Well, that is true. Nick and I are working kind of a lot more like old school Marvel style on Manhattan Projects than we are working straight script. He's a little bit of jazz in there, right?
Yeah, it's cool. It feels really collaborative. It's cool because like. If I want to try something, Hickman will write something cool. Whereas if I try to do it, it would be very literal, and he makes it smart. So it's a good mix of like me being awkward with the art, and then the writing is strong. So it really feels collaborative and cool. So.
Speaking of Fantastic Four, I am enjoying the series so far, and I'm looking forward to how it's going to end. I know that last year everyone bashed at you for killing off Johnny Storm, but then recently you brought him back. Was that, like, part of this question, was it your intention to bring him back like that, to kind of, like, make us think he's dead, but knowing comic book worlds, they have a tendency of resurrecting characters back from the dead? Like, did you already know he was coming back?
Yeah, all that was in my initial pitch.
Okay.
You know, all of that stuff, how he comes back. The only thing that I had in the pitch that we did not get to do was, you know how Ben became, like, human?
Yes.
Right? And he had that week, and then he got to bang his girlfriend finally. She was going to get pregnant. Alicia Masters was going to get pregnant, and Ben was going to be a dad. And she was going to be delivering the baby when all the world-ending stuff was happening at the end, right? Okay. And when Johnny came back, all of that stuff would tie into it.
Exactly.
It was so, that's the only thing they told me that I could not do.
Okay.
Because we want, Marvel is very interested in not aging the characters, and they think that giving a character a kid or marrying characters and stuff like that it complicates the intellectual property. And they're right about that. But it's one of those things where I was like kind of bummed because it would have been pretty cool. Right. So.
And so how do you intend to end the story? Like,
I'm not going
to
tell you that. How am I going to end the story?
Like, on a very satisfactory note?
I mean, it's going to be, yes, you're going to love it.
Extremely underwhelming.
And on my last question, for Manhattan Projects, what direction will you continue going down with the story? Like, do you intend to just keep making it so big, or will there be more secrets that will be revealed as it keeps going?
Well,
because I know that you don't want to end it right now, so...
Things are going to continue to evolve, and we're not going to know, you know, entirely where it's going. But our entire goal is to give you a satisfying chunk in every issue and tell you a complete story in that one issue while building towards other stuff and hopefully making it the most fun book on the market. I mean, that's what we're trying to do. It's supposed to be fun, you know, and evil. But evil and fun, right?
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Oppenheimer is going to eat an alien's brain at some point.
Oh.
Maybe.
Will that cause the alien to be one of his personalities or something?
No.
Is that how he transfers it?
That'd be cool. We're working on it, maybe.
Over there.
How hard is it to keep Nick from getting secrets out of Manhattan?
Nick thinks that nobody's going to love him if he doesn't tell them special information, and so Nick is. What is that? What's the philosophical? No, not like.
Liability. I like that.
You're what's bringing us down now.
I like it.
Nick is like, this is like the second book that Nick has ever done, and he's so excited. And that's the joy of working with Nick. He's like, he gets up every day and he's like a rabbit. He's so jacked to get drawing and. And it's just everything is fun and everything is awesome, and he wants to talk about everything, and he wants everybody to know what's going on, and he's like a kid at Christmas. That's what it's like. It's like a kid at Christmas.
I have an actual question. Like, it's called Manhattan Projects. So I was set up for a facade of them. Like, oh, we'll get to the bomb eventually. But I don't know if anyone's cut out, but, like, they're already blown. So their cover is blown. I mean, the bomb's gone. So
yeah.
I'm excited to see how they're going to keep it, how they're going to keep the charade going.
Oh, I don't. I think it's a mistake to think that megalomaniacs want to stay in the closet.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'll just ask Nick. I'll tell you.
What's the difference between Ryan and Nick? Well. One has one is very well endowed, the other is not.
Nice. that's an imagination.
That's so awful. So awful.
John why he knows.
Yeah, exactly. It's different. You would think that mass and weight would not be. And I'm just kidding. All right, so that's a volume joke, dude. Let's see. Working with Ryan is working with both of them is wonderful. It's why I'm working with both of them. You know, the thing about it is working with Nick makes me feel like a kid. You know, it makes me really excited to work on the book, and it just makes me smile, you know, just talking about it. I mean, it's just a shitload of fun. And I mean, I absolutely love working with him. I've loved Nick's stuff since the first time I saw it. I have been Nick's biggest champion.
Yes. I've only worked with John, and he actually got my first job in Marvel.
Nick pitched to be the initial artist on S.H.I.E.L.D. over at Marvel. Like, he's got pitch pages for that are amazing. Obviously, we were fortunate to get Dustin Weaver on the book, but I mean, I've pushed Nick for everything that I've done because I just love working with him. And so that's what working with Nick is like. Working with Ryan is entirely different than that.
Opposite.
Ryan is a craft junkie, and he's interested in everything being meticulous and perfect, and he's always like I'll tell Nick some insane shit that we're gonna do, and he'll be like, "That sounds awesome," and I tell Ryan some insane shit that we're gonna do, and he's gonna be like, "All right, well, I'm not sure if that works with this and this and this and this," and I'm like, "All right, fine, you're right on one of those points, and I concede, but I would rather you be more excited and just do what I say." And so Ryan, working with Ryan makes for a better crafted story. You know, and so, I think we're producing two really good books. I do. I mean, I'm super excited about both of them, and I feel super privileged. But yeah, it's radically different. It's radically different. And it's the same thing across, like, Marvel books, too. Working with those guys is the guys that I work with at Marvel, is each one is a completely different experience. So.
I have a question. What happened in terms of the production of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Was that a Marvel?
That was Marvel is, you know, they're a machine, and they have to produce 70 books a month. And one of the things that they do is they started a year and a half ago deciding that it was better business to produce more issues of books that sold really well as opposed to a bunch of miniseries and stuff like that, which is why you stop seeing a bunch of, like, Namor miniseries and whatever miniseries were out there, and you started seeing overships of Uncanny X-Force. You know, instead of 12 issues a year, you got 16 issues a year and stuff like that. And so that drastically increased the work on the people that wrote those books. And so I went from having, and for me it was even worse, I went from having a Fantastic Four book to having two Fantastic Four books. So I went from 12 issues to 24, which I could do that. That was no big deal. But then they also decided to do AVX, and I was going to be involved in that. And they just literally said, you know, "Jonathan, your workload is too much." And they don't care about the Image stuff. I mean, they don't care if I fuck that up. They care about their trains running on time, which is their prerogative. But they said, you know, basically that I had to change my schedule. And so we bumped S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D. got bumped because of, like, AVX and double shipping. And then it's taken us a little while to get back to it. But Dustin Weaver's drawing it right now. And they're not going to solicit until 5 and 6 are done. But I've got pages in for 5, and it's gorgeous. So. Dustin's really, really something else. There's no doubt about that. So,
over here.
So how many titles do you have going on?
So, everything?
Yeah.
Well, I'm done with AVX. AVX 6. I only did Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker and myself are doing 2 issues each, and then Jason Aaron and Brian Bendis are doing 3. So that equals 12, maybe, right? It does, yes. And my issues were 4 and 6, and so I'm actually finished with AVX now, so I don't have to worry about that. And I actually only have 3 more issues of Fantastic Four to write, and then I'm done with that. And I have another issue of S.H.I.E.L.D. to write, and then I'm done with that. And so really right now, beyond Manhattan Projects in Secret, I only have one other thing that I'm working on. I can't say what that is.
So my question really,
sometimes Yeah, no. I mean, Marvel's been a grind lately for everybody that writes there, because you're doing five different art teams, because books are double shipping and they're shipping out of order, and or you're writing out of order, and so it's really, really difficult. But no, I mean, I that's what it's been like lately. But I talk to Ryan and Nick as much as I can. I talk to Nick more than I talk to Ryan, because once Ryan's in his right, you don't want to be bothered, right? You turn your phone off, don't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He needs complete quiet. You listen to music, right?
Yeah, just pretty much try to get as much silence or music as possible.
Rush.
Nice.
Rush, right? I'm sorry.
I think me and John talk like two, three times a week. I like getting the feedback when I turn stuff in, and I need that positive reinforcement and stuff. It's always cool. And I work really late, and he works late, too. So we know we're up, and if I'm bored, it's cool. So, I'm, you know, when you say you're about to turn some pages in, when he's waiting on pages, and you say, I'm about to turn them in, so then you know that's not going to be for another 24 hours. So then like, when he calls you, you're like, I just force myself to answer no matter what. So, but it's cool. Always a good conversation, fun. And he always is giggling because he knows I'm really tired or whatever.
Because you're lying.
He's like, yeah, I'm like, now it's to the point where I say, oh, I'm going to give him to you in a few hours. He just laughs. He's like, okay.
So tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
What music do you listen to, Nick, when you're drawing?
I like it's a lot of different music now because I work so much. But my favorite artists are like Jim Croce. I don't know. He's like old school guy.
Sure.
And he's a storyteller. He's really good. And then I like Elliot Smith, too. He's an indie rock guy. It was really cool. Those are my two favorite.
They're all dead. Yeah. You get it? They're all dead.
Mike, what do you like to listen to? When you?
I don't usually listen to music when I color or draw for some reason. Yeah. But just as far as music goes, Tom Waits is my absolute favorite musician. Nice. And then most of my taste kind of goes out from there in various ways.
John, other than Van Halen, who else are you?
Oh, anything Go-Go's or Belinda Carlisle related. I like... Depeche Mode.
Nice.
Madonna.
Sweet.
I'm listening to a lot of Katy Perry. I'm fucking around.
Wow.
That's awesome. I cannot believe that she tied Michael Jackson's record for most number one singles on a single album. Oh. I was very angry to hear
that. You can't believe Katy Perry did that?
Yeah.
I don't know. She seems like a lot of fun. You know? She seems like she's having a good time. She's excited. She's jumping around. She's singing.
Exactly.
There's something to that. I listen to a lot of soundtracks, like movie soundtracks and stuff like that.
What's your favorite soundtrack in the last year?
In the last year?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you mean what I've listened to the most last year?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, everybody played the shit out of that Drive soundtrack, right?
Yeah.
So not counting that. You know, I still listen to that Gladiator soundtrack a lot because that was Dead Can't Dance. Mm-hmm. And I like the soundtrack to Sunshine a whole lot. So
Underworld. Yeah.
Right, the Tron soundtrack. I listen to the shit out of the Tron soundtrack.
Oh, that's...
The Tron movie was the most heartbreaking experience that I've ever had in a movie. I don't understand why that wasn't the greatest movie ever, and it just wasn't.
It has the best soundtrack ever.
Yes.
I just don't understand.
You said it was good the day it came out.
I went and saw it the third time, and then and all the polish went off of it. So
that's great.
It is a great kids movie though. My kid will watch it, and he's like, Dad, they're getting ready to throw the lights frisbees at each other. Watch this.
Have you shown him the original?
Yeah, but man,
no, it doesn't.
So.
Well, then, in that case, who's your favorite music composer of all time? Like, for me, it's John Williams or Hans Zimmer.
My favorite music composer? Who's your favorite music composer of all time?
Yeah, all four of you.
I have every John Williams soundtrack, so I'd probably have to go with John Williams. Even some really... Space Camp on soundtrack.
Oh.
Now see, Space Cowboys.
My music goes deep.
Space Cowboys. Now there's a movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not joking. I love that movie. You do a movie with a bunch of old dudes hanging out. I'm there. Did Hans Zimmer do the Time Machine soundtrack?
No.
Who
did that?
See, you gotta say that. I think you're wrong.
I don't think it's him.
Huh? Okay.
Could be.
I like that.
That's a great
give me more of that.
He did the soundtrack Time from Inception. I thought that's what you were gonna say.
No. Yeah.
Nick?
You don't
me?
Care, do you?
I don't listen to soundtrack stuff.
That. I don't watch television. What's a television?
No, I like that. The last song, I think, I like that Drive song. The song, the Bruce Springsteen song from The Wrestler was a good song.
Yeah.
And then I like that one, what's his face, that the dude, the country thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
You talking about Crazy Heart?
Yeah, I like that. I like that song a lot.
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, yeah. And so those are the only soundtrack songs I think.
You know that was actually Colin Farrell singing in that movie?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I heard that.
It was. It really was.
Wow. We got a little bit more time. Anybody else have any questions?
Somebody asked me some more about Colin Farrell. I could talk about him all
day. Really? So are you excited about... Yeah.
I don't know. I'll go see it.
Yeah. Well,
no, I said I would go see it. I'll totally go see it. Yeah. I mean, how do you not go see something that... I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but doesn't that have... what's her name from Underworld in it?
Beckinsale.
I don't know. Like the only reason why
Michael
I
Sheen's outfit from Tron.
Do what?
And John Cho wearing Michael Sheen's outfit from Tron Legacy.
Okay. You guys have seen it.
Yeah.
You guys have seen In Bruges, right?
Yeah, that's the
See?
Best.
There you go. That's my Colin Farrell. That's the you're like you watch that movie and you're like, holy shit, he can act like really really well.
Yeah.
And then they killed a midget.
Would you say is that like Philip K. Dick is a great sci-fi writer? Is that one of the stories you like of his, or do you have any favorites of his?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, isn't Blade Runner a Philip K.
Yeah,
Dick?
Yeah, Android's Dream.
Right. So I guess Blade Runner. Right.
Yeah.
It's Blade Runner.
Another great soundtrack too. Anybody else? We got about. One more question, or maybe two here, yeah.
So, you guys all work in comics and you obviously would you like to take things and work with the comics and make it in the movie, movies, video games, and make your work on the next
level? I think that would be really cool.
Ryan really wants a movie. Ryan wants a movie deal. You do want a movie deal?
I don't want to work in movies, though.
Oh, well, yeah, you don't want to be a storyboard artist. You would hate that. That would drive
I would
nuts.
Absolutely hate that. I love comics. I just, it's
I don't know, man. I got to tell you, that stuff is all, like, completely different once you kind of get into it. Like, you read a draft of, like, some screenwriter adapting one of your things. Like, I read a draft of Nightly News, and it was a fucking abortion. I mean, it was awful. And you read it, and you're like, I don't want anyone to see this or have anything to do with it. I mean, it's just all that stuff for it to be enjoyable, I think, has to be perfect. You know, or a big check, right? Big check.
Exactly. There are looms that want it.
So.
I remember last year I asked you about the possibility of a... I know that they're trying to reboot Fantastic Four and that you mentioned you'd take the check if they did a Future Foundation, but I don't know. Any other particular story of yours... Like, would you want Manhattan Project or Secret Wars to one day be a movie? And if you could, what kind of direction could you view it as? Like, who would you imagine, you know, would do good at the screenplay? And
I would love for Colin Farrell to be.
acting-wise, or...
I'm only interested in that stuff if it's right. You know, I mean, I'm only interested in that kind of junk if you get to work with talented people. You know, I don't want to work with the dudes that did Wanted, and I don't mean that dismissively. It's just like they told me they were making Wanted, and I wanted to see Wanted, and it was a movie about it was completely different. I'm not interested.
Well, what if
in
it
that.
Was the crew who did the Avengers, which we can all agree was the best movie ever. So what if it was that crew? Would you trust?
No, them? I don't think Josh. Joss Whedon is talented at all. I would never want to hear anything that I did.
Well, Alien 4 may have been his dumb movie, but The Avengers was his best. So.
That dude's awesome. Yeah. There's nothing that guy
he's
does.
He's doing a series with awesome. Warren Ellis, so you never know.
Yeah, a little dead enders, something like that, right?
Isn't
that
yeah.
So. One last question.
Yep.
And Ryan will take his shirt off for you.
Ooh.
No promises.
You don't get to see him without a shirt if you don't ask a question, right?
I guess I'm going to go smoke.
Really? Wow.
I was really hoping if I could, you not take your shirt.
There you go. Nobody wants to
Thank you so much for coming. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.